Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, Chapter 27, The Centaur and the Sneak.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real weird sisters please stand up?
We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the weird sisters, we're the real weird sisters. All you other weird sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real weird sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
And I'm Alice.
And today we're here to talk about Chapter 27 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Alice, how's it going this week?
Good. Martha, I was thinking The Centaur and the Sneak. That could have been an alternate title for this podcast.
Dibs on Centaur.
No, you're the Sneak.
I think you're a little sneakier than I am.
Yeah, but I'm not a tattletale. You were more of a tattletale as a child.
No, maybe I just had more things to tattletale on. Yeah, you didn't have anything to tattletale on because I was such an angel.
Right, yeah, as if.
Well, yeah, Allison, I don't see any pimples on, or pustules on either of our faces.
Pustules.
How do you say it?
Pustules.
Pustules. I don't see any pustules on either of our faces that are spelling out the word sneak, so.
No, that's good.
That's why we went with the real weird sisters and not the centaur and
exactly.
The sneak.
Either of us could pass as a centaur.
Yeah. Well, Alice, we do have a little bit of housekeeping to get to before we get into this chapter. First of all, we were on another podcast this past week. Actually, we were on this podcast like several months ago, but this is our round two of our Geek Wars attempt. So Geek Wars
that's kind of a spoiler to people if you haven't heard round one. We did make it to round two.
Somehow.
Now, whether we'll make it to round three or not, you have to hear round two in order to see.
Yeah, definitely listen. It's a lot of fun. You can find their show by either looking at our Twitter, where we retweeted the link. Of course, that is at Real Weird Sister. Or you can search for Geek Wars in the podcast app or whatever podcast app you use. So we were on round two. The title of the episode is Superman, John of Justice. And you heard that correctly. It's not Dawn of Justice. It's John of Justice.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun on that show. That's a really well-done show. If you like trivia stuff, it's definitely check that out.
And it was a very humbling experience for both of us. Although, actually, the first round was not so humbling because
we
were...
don't give away anything about how we did on
the round.
Well,
I was just going to say, like, we were really not looking forward. We thought we were going to do really bad, and then round one we did a little bit better than we were expecting. But then round two certainly humbled us.
Well... You're giving away a lot. We might have won.
We certainly may have. I'm not giving anything away, but definitely check that out. The second of all, is some very important housekeeping, or should I say sidewalk keeping.
Good one.
Because...
All your wordplay is so misguided.
House, sidewalk, it just kind of goes naturally. And this is definitely about the sidewalk, because... We found out the difference between cement and concrete. We were really on the edges of our seats, and no less than four real weirdos reached out to us. I think maybe even five, but definitely I wrote down Meredith, Sarah, Andrew, and Crystal all reached out to tell us that cement is an ingredient in concrete.
So, now that I've heard that from four different sources, I feel no need to Google it. I can feel like I can confirm that through them. So.
The real reason we started this show in the first place was just so that we could
super boring things.
Exactly. But thank you very much for telling us that information. Real weirdos, we appreciate it.
I honestly don't even remember why we were talking about that, but...
Some floor and... I don't know.
Oh, we said that that's what I pictured the... I pictured
the
concrete floor in the...
Department of Mysteries.
Yes.
Yeah. But I said I thought it was cement, but I guess there's
I
no
guess
such
I
thing
was
as...
right.
Well, I guess we were both right, because cement is in concrete, so...
That's true.
But concrete is not in cement.
Very true.
Okay. Anyway, we should probably get into this chapter. Alice, I noticed that while we're recording... You're busy curling your eyelashes around your wand and examining the effects on the back of your
spoon. I don't
think
I have long enough eyelashes to do that.
Yeah, Parvati is pretty well endowed, I guess, to be able to curl her eyelashes around a wand. That's a pretty thick thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe she has a narrow wand. Mm. Surprisingly good at for curling eyelashes. That's what Ollivander described it as.
Yeah. That's a new use of wands that I haven't seen before.
I'll bet you wish you hadn't given up divination now, don't you, Alice?
Not really. Never. I've never really liked horses. I honestly was pretty shocked, but this was Hermione's reaction, by the way, in case you don't remember, to finding out that Ferenczi is now the instructor. I am really a little bit shocked that Hermione would be... It's pretty rude to say about centaurs.
Yeah, I know. It's like calling Hagrid a giant or, you know, calling Lupin a wolf.
Like... Well, okay, but yeah, Hagrid calling him a giant, that is half true. I guess that's half true of the...
It's half true of a centaur.
But I don't know if that's how centaurs were really created.
Well, I don't really
It's not
know.
Like a human and a horse breed together and then that's where centaurs come from.
That's
like,
news to me that it's not species. How that... Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Like, maybe originally, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think the centaurs, like, breed with each other now.
Ferenczi's weirdo dad and his horse mom.
But anyway, I do find it a little insult. I mean...
It is insulting.
And Hermione is normally pretty, like, open to other species and, like, inclusive and stuff, so that's why it's a little weird coming from her. Like, if Ron said it, I wouldn't be surprised, but...
Well, I have to say, the main thing I remember feeling surprised and a little bit disturbed by, the first time I read this, I was like, why would Hermione wish she hadn't given up divination? And then I was like, what? Parvati and Lavender think that Ferenczi is hot? Like, what? Like, very disturbing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he like, never wears a shirt, so he must be pretty, like, ripped, has, like, good abs and stuff.
Yeah, well, Ferenczi in the movie is...
Ooh, sexy right there.
He's so creepy.
I have to say, before we get into the chapter, I do enjoy this chapter art.
Ferenczi, again, not seeing the attraction here, but I do like the detail that Mary Grand Pré puts into her illustrations. There is, in fact, a hoof print in Ferenczi's chest.
Do the female centaurs wear any shirt?
Are there female centaurs?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just kind of thinking maybe it's just the male centaurs mate with humans, because, I mean, they've clearly got girls lining up for them.
Yeah, clearly. There's a lot of weird things about centaurs. I don't really want to go into more of the physics with them.
Or the... the bedroom routines of them.
Yeah, well, Hermione points out... Either way, he's still got four legs.
Yeah,
well, again, it's like a little weird of Hermione, but... Like, just a little bit less inclusive than she normally is.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But the chapter art, there's a very clear hoof print on Ferenczi's chest.
Right, that's what I just said.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't listening, I guess. I was too distracted by the really hot centaur in front
of
me.
Yeah, clearly Alice is just in the same camp as Lavender and Parvati here.
That hoof print, though, is a little too spot on, for my opinion.
It's very deep.
It must be. Yeah, no, I don't know.
Yeah, so Lavender and Parvati, of course, are very into Ferenczi, but of course their loyalties have not completely shifted because they're still quite upset that Trelawney is gone. They've taken her some daffodils, not those honking ones that Sprouts got, nice ones.
I like how Lavender has to clarify that.
Yes. But they've given an update that she's not doing super well, but this kind of does change the subject a little bit into just talking about Umbridge and Hermione's prediction that Umbridge is going to want revenge on Dumbledore, and she's only just started being horrible.
Right. Hermione really does have a very good read on Umbridge. I think she always kind of knows what to predict from Umbridge, and she can really get inside her head as far as like understanding kind of what motivates her and what makes her tick. Ron's a little bit, like, naive here. Because Hermione says, like, oh, we haven't seen the worst of her. And he's like, impossible.
Yeah.
She can't get any worse than she's been already.
Yeah.
Okay, Ron. Like, I don't think he's joking. I think he's...
No, he clearly thinks
like,
that
I know she's been horrible, but, like, is he really that? Like, I feel like he's testing fate by saying that.
Yeah, that's one thing. He's also just extremely naive. Like, yeah. Clearly, like... Also, have you noticed what's been happening to your life for the last 4 years, Ron? Like, every time that you say something's gonna, like, as bad as it's gonna get, it gets worse.
Yeah, he does that every year.
Yes. Yeah, and speaking of Ron being naive, he also, thinks that divination is going to still be in North Tower, even though Ferenczi has hooves and is clearly not gonna be making that trek.
Yeah, I guess I probably wouldn't think of that either. I guess... It's magic, so you'd think that he would be able to be, like, somehow magicked up there, but it's better that they just give him a classroom, like, a regular, like, on a lower floor.
I think it's on the first floor because it's room 11, which I hadn't really, I feel like we don't ever hear the names of the numbers of the classrooms, but 11 has to be on the ground floor, I would think.
That's true, yeah. It's, you're right, I can't think of any of the other rooms having numbers, but.
Oh, and it does say classroom 11 was situated in the ground floor corridor.
Oh, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until now. But yeah, it's a very interesting classroom. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, I guess it's been enchanted to look like the Forbidden Forest because Ferenczi is not allowed back in the Forbidden Forest after what he's done to his herd, which is he's associated with humans.
Right. Yeah, so it's been bewitched. There's mossy floor, there's trees growing out of it, and leaves all over the place. It sounds kind of cool. It's kind of like entering the wardrobe into Narnia, if Narnia was not in winter, you know?
Yeah, and I like how later on, like, Harry, when the bell rings, he's, like, so jarred because he forgot that he was inside. He thought he was in the Forbidden Forest.
Yes. So
it's pretty funny. Well, like I said, the classroom is pretty cool, but, like, one of our patrons, Arlen, pointed out in our group last week, we talked a lot about how Dumbledore's move to hire Ferenczi ahead of time, etc., was really cool, but the fact of the matter is, like, this is another example of Dumbledore kind of using someone. So Arlen said, Ferenczi's hiring leads to banishment from his kind, almost to his death, just to irritate Umbridge. Dumbledore strikes again.
Yeah.
So, like, that's
classic Dumbledore.
That's a pretty good point. Like, really, Dumbledore is not, I mean, it's nice and accommodating of him to make this classroom like the Forbidden Forest, but, like, it's kind of
the least he could do.
Yeah, really. And I mean, it's Dumbledore's fault that Ferenczi can't be in the Forbidden Forest.
Yes. I mean, one could also argue that it's Ferenczi's fault for saying yes to taking the job.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was equal parts, but it was definitely Dumbledore's idea.
Yes. Well, okay. I mean, I feel like Dumbledore, just to try to be on his side a little bit, I feel like Dumbledore kind of has like a working understanding of the dynamics of the centaurs, and yeah. Maybe he knew that Ferenczi was already kind of on the outs, and I mean Ferenczi's happy to do this. Like, I think he's always wanted to interact with humans more, so
yeah, maybe Dumbledore knew not to ask Bane to become the professor.
And I mean, Bane would have like attacked Dumbledore. McGorry and Ronan would have been like, it is not the centaur's duty to
Mars is bright tonight.
Yeah, they'd be super cryptic and not helpful. They wouldn't, like, actually physically attack Dumbledore, I don't think, but...
But yeah, so when they're all discussing the classroom, Parvati asks why they can't go into the forest. Why not? We've been in there with Hagrid. We're not frightened.
It is not a question of your bravery. This is bad. I don't know what Frenzy's voice sounds like. It has, like, a hollow voice, right? He goes, but of my position, I can no longer return to the forest. My herd has banished me.
And then Lavender's all confused. A herd?
And it says, Harry knew she was thinking of cows. That's like one of Alice's and my favorite lines to just talk about.
And it's like, okay, yeah, she probably is thinking of, like, a farm animal, which could be thinking of sheep or something.
Yeah, I don't know why Harry knew.
A flock of sheep.
Harry knew immediately.
Do you call horses a herd?
Probably not.
Probably cows is more accurate, I guess.
Oxen.
But... Yeah, oxen. Martha's favorite animal.
Not my favorite animal. It's just an animal I had a dream about once.
But yeah, so then, like, the class is kind of showing that they're not super used to talking to centaurs or, like, don't really know what's politically correct.
Yeah, Dean. Did Hagrid breed you like the Thestrals? And then it's like, oh, no, he didn't.
That was not the right thing to say. That was pretty offensive. So... At least Dean does back down, like, he can clearly immediately know, like, and he realizes that that was not the right thing to say.
Yeah, Dean is, I mean, I guess he's been subject to prejudice as well, being a muggle-born.
That's true, yeah, but I don't know if anyone asked him if he was breeded.
I hope not. Why would you, yeah, how could you breed muggle-borns, though?
Yeah, I guess you couldn't.
Yeah, but yeah, so Ferenczi does tell them that he's betrayed the herd because he's agreed to work for Professor Dumbledore. And so Harry's, like, wondering whether it had been Bane that kicked Ferenczi in the chest.
I know, I like how Harry's kind of, like, afraid of Bane.
Yeah, well, are you not afraid of Bane?
Well, he sounds kind of hot. Just kidding.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I did want to say one thing. We've had pointed out to us in the past that some people don't like our pronunciation of Firenze.
Yeah, it should be Firenze, right?
Well, no, I looked it up on online, how you say this word, which means Florence, or the same word for the word Florence, Italy.
In Italian,
yeah. So,
and Latin.
I looked up the pronunciation of that, and it is something along the lines of Firenze.
Yeah, I'm going to call him Firenze. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, and I'm taking Firenze. I got that pronunciation from Jim Dale. So that's, I just wanted to explain, that's why we say Firenze.
Although, I think they also say it in the movie.
I don't remember, but yeah, I think so too.
Well, anyway, I'm sorry that I'm not an Italian speaker.
Yeah, well, and it just, I feel like we would sound really tooly if we were trying to say Firenze.
Yeah. Every time. Really? That doesn't sound tooly at all. Yeah, so.
I mean, Firenze speaks English, so I'm guessing maybe, like, that they, like, there's an anglicized version of his name that they all call him.
Yeah, like Firenze.
Exactly.
Yeah, so their lesson that they go through here is weird. Harry describes it as the most unusual class he's ever, or the most unusual lesson he's ever attended. My favorite part about it, though, is his little burn that he sneaks in on Professor Trelawney. And he goes, when Parvati is, like, getting all excited that they're gonna do astrology, and Frenzy's like, shuts that down right away. He's like, that's human nonsense. And then Parvati's like, but Professor Trelawney, and Frenzy goes, is a human, and therefore is blind, or is blinkered and fettered by the limitations of your kind. Pretty rude.
Yeah. But it's interesting, because I do like how we get this distinction between whether, he does say she may have seen with a capital S, so she may have been a seer, he's not sure, but he thinks that she spends too much time on fortune telling, and so we see a difference, like, what Trelawney normally does is more of that fortune telling thing, so it's interesting to see that distinction spelled out for us.
Yeah, I know Professor Trelawney has seer blood in her, she's related to Cassandra, the infamous seer. Is she a seer? Like, I still don't really get it, because I know she's capable of making prophecies.
Yeah, I don't know how it works generally, if other seers are limited, and, like, only occasionally you'll have visions that kind of, or not visions, but, like, you'll go into, like, a trance where you can see the future.
Yeah.
Or if maybe there's some who are, like, maybe Cassandra, for example, was more powerful, and she was able to, like, almost, like, was very frequently making prophecies.
More, or, like, more in touch with that side of herself. Because, like, I feel like Cassandra was more of a seer than Professor Trelawney. But I think the thing is, like, I've always kind of felt like she definitely, the way that she makes the prophecies, it's like her seer blood is coming out, but that doesn't necessarily make her a seer.
Yeah. That's interesting to think about. I think I would consider her a seer, but, like, it's totally involuntary. Like, she has no control on it. And I don't know if other seers do.
Yeah, but that's what's complicated.
The thing I was going to also say is that it's kind of funny how many prophecies there are in the Ministry of Magic, considering, like...
Yeah.
Who are all the people making these prophecies constantly?
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe they just go back, like, really, really far.
Yeah, in history.
I mean, they probably do, because, I mean, I think most... Well, they're all smashed now, but I think that in the Department of Mysteries, like, head, like, the way it should go is that those prophecies stay there forever, even once they've happened. Like, they don't get rid of them. Right. So it probably goes all the way back to, like, the, like, Greek mythology and stuff like that.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know. I don't really know anything about that kind of magic, but... Anyway, the lesson that doesn't sound like great methodology here, that his pedagogic technique...
It was
technique
really worth
is,
it for him to get kicked out of his room to be able to give a lesson like this.
His pedagogic technique is basically just to blab about all the things he knows how to do, but that nobody here is going to be able to do.
I don't think there's a lot of educational philosophy to back that up.
It says, his priority did not seem to be to teach them what he knew, but rather to impress upon them that nothing, not even Centaur's knowledge, was foolproof. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Like, he just goes back and forth. Like, he's like, well, we know a lot more than you, but even we know nothing. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I think in some ways it's better than Trelawney. Like, he definitely has more of a grasp on seeing the future and understanding, like, what's coming and stuff. But I think, yeah, he's kind of the opposite of Trelawney in the sense that he, like, has no qualms about just, like, not expecting anyone to succeed. And,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
He does not think he's going to be able to teach them.
Right. And it's interesting, too. The only interesting thing about this lesson, actually, like, the only pressing thing, is that he does say that the indications, according to the stars, have been that wizardkind is living through nothing more than a brief calm between two wars. Which, of course, is true, because they're in the spot between the two wars that are, you know, the new war is about to break out, basically. And Ron's a little bit, like, slow to the uptake here, because he's like, I could do with a few more details about this war we're about to have, couldn't you? It's like, Ron, can't you tell that you're on the brink of war right now?
Well, that's why he needs more details.
Okay, well, sounds more like he's like, Ferenczi thinks there's gonna be a war.
Yeah, he's a little skeptical.
Yeah, but I mean, like, clearly they are on the brink of a second war. That's, they've been in the calm between the two for the last 15 years.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the centaurs are able to divine this from the stars, but yeah, I agree. That's probably the only interesting thing that, as far as, like, the lesson goes.
Because Mars shines brightly tonight. That's what he says here. Yeah, so like we said, the lesson was not super fun, but at the end of the class, Ferenczi does leave Harry and Ron with an interesting message to pass on to Hagrid. He tells him to pass on the message that his attempt is not working. He would do better to abandon it.
Right, which is pretty cryptic. I think the centaurs really only like speaking cryptically, but Hagrid is going to understand what he means right away. The other thing I think that's kind of interesting about this particular part of the scene is he asks Harry for a word in private, so Ron's kind of, like, about to leave, and Ferenczi's like, oh, you may stay, to Ron. And it's like, well, so he somehow, like, knows that he can trust Ron.
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty clear. Like, I mean, I guess Ron wasn't there the night of the detention, so it's just Harry that Ferenczi knows for sure is friends with Hagrid, but, I mean, Ferenczi, he seems like he pays attention.
He just has a really, my point was that he just has a really good read on the situation.
Yeah.
And I feel like centaurs, they just have, like, this sixth sense for who they can trust and
yeah,
that
that's
kind of
true.
Thing.
Although Bane's, basically, his just turned way up, so he doesn't trust anybody.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, especially not humans. But yeah, so Ferenczi is going on and on about how Hagrid has he basically tells them that Hagrid saved him from the centaurs, but he's also saying, like, he wants to pass this message on to Hagrid in return, basically.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting, too, because Ferenczi says Hagrid has long since earned his respect for the care he shows all living creatures, so that's very sweet.
Yeah, I do really like that, and that's why he won't betray the secret that Hagrid is keeping, because Harry and Ron are like, what's going on?
Right.
But Ferenczi won't tell, he just wants Harry to pass on the message.
Yeah.
So, yeah, after that warning, we do get a chapter transition here. Seems like a few weeks pass by. A dull March blurs into a squally April and says that Harry's been having trouble finding Hagrid or, like, getting a moment alone with Hagrid to tell him the warning, but finally he's able to do it. And Hagrid just brushes it all off.
Nice bloke, Ferenczi. But he don't know what he's talking about on this.
The attempt's coming on fine.
I cannot do his voice anymore. I had, like, one week where I could do it.
You kind of had it at first this week, but
yeah, then I kind of switched to sort of a southern accent, though, which is not good.
It always kind of turns into, like, a cowboy for you, and then for me, it's a mob boss. Yeah, so then Harry's like, but you have to be careful. Like, Umbridge is looking for any reason to get you sacked. And Hagrid says, there's things more important than keeping a job, Harry.
But it's sad because his hands shake slightly when he says that.
I know.
Like, poor Hagrid. He knows that he's doomed.
He does. And he's under so much pressure with Umbridge and then also with Grop. Like, that's adding a lot of stress to his life. Yeah. So poor Hagrid's probably just, like, at his wit's end. Good thing he has a limp to keep At least in his life.
She's a strong woman.
She's not afraid of roughing it, Olim. But yeah, so then Harry's just feeling, like, really down about this, and this is kind of, the next page is, like, all kind of, like, a big downer, because it's talking about how Harry's been, like, just really, it's been, everything's been really stressful for him, and then all the fifth years are extremely strung out, because it's OWL season. Hannah Abbott had to receive a calming draught from Madame Pomfrey after she burst into tears and sobbed that she was too stupid to take exams and she wanted to leave school now.
Is that more of a reaction you or I would have toward exams?
Actually, I think it's more like you.
Well, I don't think I would be sobbing.
No. In high school?
I would be yelling.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I feel like I cared about my grades a lot, but I think you were probably the one to take it, like, to that level. That's why you're a Ravenclaw.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's just funny to think about this exam.
I think both of us kind of would have been like this as 15-year-olds, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, I'm glad she got the calming draft from Madame Pomfrey, but I do think that as Madame Pomfrey's alter ego, what I would probably prescribe would be a nice box of Green Chef food.
You know, that sounds like just what she would need right now. She wouldn't have to think about meal prep at all.
Exactly. And of course, that does bring us into a word from our sponsors for the day's episode. Our podcast today is brought to you by Green Chef, which is the first USDA-certified organic meal kit delivery service. And it sends premium organic ingredients and imaginative new recipes each week, delivers them right to your doorstep.
Yeah, so many of our listeners are familiar with HelloFresh, who is another one of our regular sponsors. Green Chef is now owned by HelloFresh, and together they create one awesome company with a wide array of meal box offerings.
Yeah, I really think Hannah would benefit from this. She could, I mean, I think as a Hufflepuff, she loves food, and I'm sure she loves cooking too, and some of the meal plans that Green Chef offers are things like paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto, gluten-free, omnivore, carnivore. You can switch up your meal plan. Lots of different kinds of meals, and I really think that Hannah would love to do that as a great stress reliever. As someone who gets stressed a lot, baking and cooking is one of my best stress relievers.
I mean, when you have a lot on your plate, the last thing you want to have to do is think about and go shopping for different ingredients for recipes. Green Chef makes it really easy to not have to worry about that aspect.
Yeah, so Green Chef cuts that part out, and you just get to do the fun part, which is the cooking, and the eating, exactly.
Yeah. So I received, when I've had Green Chef, the omnivore box, so that was the one I chose to get, and I loved all of the meals, but my favorite one, I think, has to have been the barbecue chicken. It was so good. So the best part, though, in my opinion, is that these meals are not only delicious, but each and every ingredient in every recipe is thoughtfully sourced. And its journey is tracked from planting to plating.
I think as a Hufflepuff, Hannah would really appreciate that. She respects everything in nature.
Yes.
And she would really like to know where her food is coming from. So this would be a great stress reliever for her and anybody else who is looking for a way to unwind. Let Green Chef do the meal planning, grocery shopping, and most of the prep for you week after week. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/realweird.
Again, please visit greenchef.us/realweird to receive $50 off your first box of Green Chef.
And that does bring us back into the episode, Alice.
Yeah,
so it seems like this is one of the biggest themes of this book, and I feel like we've read this sentence about a million times, but this is the next line of this chapter. If it had not been for the DA lessons, Harry thought he would have been extremely unhappy.
Yeah, can you imagine this book, though, without the DA? Like, it would be such
goodness.
A downer.
Seriously. Oh, no pun intended. it would definitely be very depressing. And it already is depressing, but, I mean, I feel like every chapter, practically, we get a mention of, you know, if it weren't for the DA, Harry would be underwater, basically.
We have to get this in one last time, because it's about to come to an end here.
Yeah, exactly. So, this is our very last DA meeting, unbeknownst to Harry and the gang. They do know it's the last meeting before Easter, but it is going to be the last one that we get to see, and it's very short. It's kind of sad.
It is sad, yeah. I mean, it's nice they end on this note of they're practicing the Patronuses. So I think that's cool that they have gotten to that point. They don't perfect them necessarily, but they're working on it.
Yeah, well, producing a Patronus in the middle of a brightly lit classroom when they were not under threat was very different from producing it when confronted by something like Dementor, Alice.
That's true.
I do think it's a little... I mean, it's fun, I guess, for them to practice doing these, but, like, what's the use? I mean, actually, I do know that they end up using them, but it's a little bit silly to just be all in this brightly lit classroom practicing.
Well, and Harry says, like, we need a Boggart. I don't understand why then the Room of Requirement didn't respond with a Boggart.
Yeah, that's a little interesting. Maybe the Room of Requirement was working on it and then Dobby interrupts.
Yeah.
So there would have been a Boggart for next lesson or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so we do get to learn what a few of the DA members' Patronuses are. Cho's is a swan. And Lavender and Neville still have not been able to conjure a corporeal one. We were reading the other day that Neville apparently never is able to, but that's like a really rare gift or something, according to Pottermore.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those Pottermore things that I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah, me neither. And then
she'd be fine with me if Neville was never able to, but then it's like, yeah, it doesn't need to be seen as a gift.
No.
I don't know. I just, that doesn't really fly with me.
No, me neither. Then Seamus is there for his very first DA meeting, which is exciting.
First and last.
Yeah. I was going to mention, I think it's interesting that Seamus is able to be there. Do you think it, without being on the list, do you think it's just because, like, in terms of the Room of Requirement, the Room of Requirement knew that Harry wanted him there or something?
Or did they somehow get him to add his name to the list, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
But later when they see the list, Harry kind of acts a little bit surprised to see it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if...
It doesn't seem like it was just out in that meeting or something for Seamus to sign.
Yeah, well, isn't it hung on the wall?
Maybe. Pansy goes back and gets it is all I think is said.
But I think I remember at the beginning when they were setting up the Room of Requirement, yeah, Hermione pinned it on the wall.
Yeah. So maybe Seamus did add his name to it and that's why it was okay. But, I guess they trust Seamus enough. I mean, he is cool Seamus. The coolest guy ever.
It turns out that his Patronus is something Harry.
Yeah.
Is it Harry Potter?
That's what Harry wishes.
Harry's Patronus is probably Seamus. Something Seamus.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we do find out on Pottermore, I think, is where we find out that it's a fox. That's interesting for Seamus. I kind of would have thought it was like a mule or something.
Yeah, it seems a little too wily for him.
Yeah. I would have thought it was something that likes fire a lot.
Yeah. Like a firebird.
Yeah. A phoenix. No, yeah. He's not cool enough for that. And yeah, Hermione has an otter. I've always thought that was cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But yeah, that's the only ones we get to hear.
And Cho got a swan. Did you say that one?
Yeah, I said that one first.
Okay. Well, swan for her. That makes sense, too.
In the movie, we get to see Luna's hair and Ron's terrier, but those are not brought up in the book.
Right.
Yeah, so then Harry notices that the Room of Requirement door opens, but he doesn't see anybody come in, and that's, of course, because a very short being has entered,
yeah,
and that
Harry,
is Dobby.
Yeah, Harry, I guess, was looking at, like, just, like, his own eye level or something, instead of down.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, because Dobby only comes up to, like, his knee. So Harry notices that something is tugging at his robes, and this is a really terrifying scene, and this whole, like, these whole next couple of pages leading up to getting caught is really intense.
This chapter from here on out is, like, one of the, probably the most intense we've had in this book so far. It's just such an adrenaline rush.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's really crazy. And Dobby, I mean, normally Dobby scenes are fun. Not really from here on out, but...
Yeah, well, okay, here's the thing. Dobby, I want to talk about Dobby a lot here, because I think, first of all, Dobby's delivery of this message definitely adds to the moment, because it's so, like, broken up. Like, you can't just spit it out. So it adds to the, like, anticipation of what's going on and, like, the anxiety that's building.
Mm-hmm.
And then second of all, I just think, like, I think this scene is often forgotten because it's not in the movies. Is it where Dobby comes to them?
No.
Yeah. And so I think it's often forgotten that Dobby, this is another act of, like, very, like, great bravery from him to come to them and risk his neck to let them know. So it's not, his death in the seventh book does not come out of nowhere.
No, that's true, and that's really sad to think about. Of course,
he's really willing to do a lot for Harry.
He is a hero, a true hero, and we don't do enough moments of silence for Dobby.
He would definitely be in Gryffindor if he was in a
house. Oh, definitely, definitely Gryffindor. Alice, I'm surprised that you even had to ask if it's Dobby who does this in the movie. Don't you remember who it is in the movie?
Is it Cho?
It's Nigel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, every time that someone gets replaced, it's always Nigel.
I hate Nigel. It's the stupidest addition to the movie.
I don't remember the movie that well. I haven't seen it in a while, so.
Stupid Nigel, though.
Yeah. No, I do remember Nigel coming in, though.
He's like, and Harry's like, is she coming?
He's very brave.
Yeah, Nigel. I'm so glad that Nigel is a character that people think is real. Yeah, so Dobby comes in, and it's not just, like, a broken up message, but he also is, like, trying to punish himself for telling, because Umbridge has clearly, like, told the house elves not to tell, but he goes, well, I don't even know if I want to do an impression here.
You could do at least some of it.
Harry Potter, sir! Harry Potter, sir! Dobby has come to warn you, but the house elves have been warned not to tell!
I liked the stress in your voice.
And then we see him running head first off at the wall. Thankfully, he has all his 8 hats on, so he's okay. And Harry's like, what's happened? He's trying to keep him from hurting himself. And he goes, Harry Potter, she. He hits himself hard on the nose. This is so intense.
Yeah, so one thing I was thinking about with Dobby, like, and his bravery, and I was just thinking about how really, I mean, he's seen as, like, an outlier among the house elves as being, like, just kind of, strange out there. He doesn't want to be a servant, or he doesn't want to be a slave, I guess. He wants to be a servant, paid servant. But I was thinking about how, really, a lot of his characteristics are house elf to the max. Like, he is so loyal to Harry. I guess that's also kind of a Hufflepuff trait, but he wants to help Harry above all else. So, like, you know, when he ends up dying, but also, like, when he brings Harry, or when he tells Harry about the gillyweed and stuff like that, like, I think that's, like, house elf to the max. Like, he really wants to serve.
Yeah, well, and actually, I honestly, the more you're saying this, this is, like, describing to me why I actually think maybe one of the characters I'm most similar to is Dobby. Like, I'm flattering myself when I say that, and I know a lot of people consider Dobby to be really annoying, so I'm taking that with it, too. But I really do think that, like, I aspire to be like Dobby, because I do have that, like, serving nature in me, but it's not, like, for the sake of serving, it's for the sake of serving the ones I love. Like, that's kind of more what it is for me.
Yeah, and, like, helping other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, anyway, I think this is a scene that's very underappreciated of Dobby's character.
I love Dobby. He's so sweet.
He is, and he's just a good little guy.
Yeah, so Harry, he mouths the word Umbridge to Harry, and then that's when Harry realizes what's happening,
And it's just, like you said, the mounting tension is just so good, because Harry's like, he thought he knew, when this is before he mouths Umbridge. He's like, he thought he knew. Surely only one she could induce so much fear in Dobby.
Yes.
And it's so, like, scary, just to realize what's going on.
Yes, and so then Harry, what are you waiting for? Run! That's, like, the breaking point where it's so intense.
Yeah, and it's also, like, we've never seen this kind of, like, rule-breaking in this level before, because, like, we've had scenes with Harry and Ron and Hermione. I guess we also have the scene with Neville involved, where they were out of bed for the midnight duel. But we've never had a scene with this many of them all out of bed at once and all running. So it's super fun at the same time as it's really terrifying.
Right. Well, it is. And the thing is, they're actually not breaking rules by being out of bed right now, because Harry points out it's only 10 to 9.
Right, so if they can't be caught there.
Right. If they make it to the library or the owlery, then they could be okay.
But Umbridge later, she's like, look for anyone who's out of breath in the library.
Yes. She's so terrible. Yeah. But I did just want to say, can we just have a moment of silence for Dobby?
Yes. I do want to say, before we get to that, I think Harry does a really nice job here, too. He he makes sure that Dobby's gonna be okay, because he says to him, like, this is an order.
I know.
Like, he speaks to him in the language that he's going to understand.
After he scoops him up, which is my favorite part.
But he says, he forbids, he commands him to go down to the kitchen with the other elves, and then he tells Dobby that he has to lie to Umbridge about warning.
And he says, and I forbid you to hurt yourself.
Yeah, so it's, he really knows how to help Dobby in this situation.
He does. And Dobby, I just love Dobby.
They're such a cute little pair.
They are. He's one of Terry's best friends, to be honest with you.
He is. He's one of his best, most loyal friends.
Yeah.
And he's so brave all the times he risks his life.
Yeah, so moment of silence for Dobby. Okay. So, yeah, Dobby runs off, and Harry's starting to run. He's planning to run for the boys' bathroom and pretend he's been there all the time. If he could just reach it. Ah!
Trip jinx, Potter.
Yeah, and Malfoy gets him with a trip jinx, which it sounds like it was a pretty amusing fall, because Harry fell spectacularly, skidding along on his front for 6 feet before coming to a halt.
Yeah, well, and it's crazy, because Harry really is the only one who gets caught here.
I know.
And, I mean, it is all completely thanks to Dobby that they were able to, and I think the only reason Harry gets caught is because he's the last one to leave.
Right, because he says that he joined the back of the queue. I feel like maybe also Hermione, like, if she's able to round them up in the library, she could, like, do a spell on them to not look out of breath or something, or...
Yeah, that would be good.
Or she could, like, do a disillusionment charm or whatever to make them all, like, not show up.
Yeah, they did not have a... One thing about the DA, they probably should have had a better exit plan.
Yeah, that's something they were probably lacking.
I mean, in this moment, I get why it went down the way it did, but I just feel like if they had kind of said, okay, here's the plan. If we're, if we ever think that Umbridge is going to be, like, out to get us, like, these people are running to the library, these people are running to the bathroom, these people are running, you know, and then have, like, kind of maybe, like, have practiced the disillusionment charm, or, like, no different spells they could do to, like, protect themselves in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as Harry is proud of the DA, they also
have
some more progress they could have made.
Definitely. Maybe that was what they were saving for next meeting, but that's the kind of thing you do in the first meeting, I think.
Yeah.
So Malfoy gets Harry, and Umbridge is so delighted. I think she gives Draco 50 points to Slytherin.
I mean, he did catch the best one.
Right, and then she sends Umbridge off to the she sends Malfoy off to the library, like you said, to look for anybody out of breath and check the bathrooms.
Yeah, and Harry's already, like, reminiscing the death of the DA, because he's like, and it had been Seamus's very first meeting, and Neville had been getting so good.
Poor Harry.
After Neville was unable to make his patrol.
Well, Alice, that's a true gift, to not be able to make a corporeal patronus. Yeah, Umbridge, in her most dangerous voice ever, you can come with me to the headmaster's office, Potter.
She's scary, and this
whole scene, she is really scary.
Like, you just feel this, like, mounting doom of how is Harry going to get out of this one?
Yes, definitely.
So, she takes him to Dumbledore's office.
Right, and the people who are in there are Dumbledore, McGonagall, Cornelius Fudge, Kingsley, Dawlish, we don't have the name for him yet, but we do find out this is an Auror named Dawlish, and Percy Weasley.
Ugh, Percy and Fudge are so insufferable in this scene.
Yeah, Percy is hovering excitedly beside the wall, a quill and a heavy scroll of parchment in his hands, apparently poised to take notes. I just want to punch Percy in the face.
Oh, yeah, and Harry wants to smack Percy later, too.
I certainly would like to.
Yeah, he's the worst. And then Fudge is super, like, giddy, because he thinks that he's going to be, like, he's framing Harry, and...
Yeah, he's rocking backward and forward on his toes. Oh, yeah, and then, of course, Kingsley is being a double agent here. It's kind of the one comic relief of this scene.
Yeah. He's much more sly about it than most of the Order members usually are.
Well... Kingsley's got style.
Yeah. But wasn't he the one who Arthur invited because Molly's making meatballs?
Molly's making meatballs. Yeah, I think Kingsley probably would have been okay in that situation, but Arthur was kind of blowing up their spot.
Arthur was worse about keeping that under wraps, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, so then they have this little banter at first where...
Oh, also I really love, real quick, sorry, I love how all of the portraits of the headmasters are not pretending to sleep.
Yeah.
They're just, like, super obviously listening in.
Yeah, they're, like, some of them are, like, going into each other's frames to like, whisper to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah, so it starts out, and Umbridge tells Fudge that it was thanks to the Malfoy boy that they got Harry, and Fudge, did he? I must remember to tell Lucius.
Yeah.
Yeah, your best friend Lucius.
It's super annoying.
I mean, Lucius.
Lucius.
Harry Potter. yeah, so then Fudge, he says, well, Potter, I expect you know why you're here. And Harry's about to say yes, but then he notices that Dumbledore is telling him to shake his head no. Yes, Alice, this doesn't work on a podcast, but you're currently shaking your head, so...
Yeah, I tried to do an imperceptible shake from one side to the other. That's one of the things I always think about with Dumbledore, like the imperceptible nod, or the imperceptible shake, I guess. Kind of like when the other thing I always think about is when he puts his fingertips together in the courtroom. So anyway, I just think I know we've been annoyed with Dumbledore, but I just think he's got style.
He does have style, you can't deny.
He's pretty amazing in this whole scene. He really does a good job.
Yeah, so Harry says no, and Fudge is like, I beg your pardon. Harry says no. Don't know why you're here. Harry says no again, and this is again, Dumbledore does do an imperceptible nod, and even the shadow of a wink, Alice. Oh yeah, that was not good.
I just did a really slow wink at Martha, but it was terrible.
No, it was really bad.
It'll be more like...
Okay, this is an audio medium.
Yeah, so. Probably for good reason.
Yeah, very true.
But yeah, no, Dumbledore is just, he's so subtle, I love it.
Yeah, and then I love Harry, he, like, gets really into the whole lie, because he keeps having to say no, so he mixes it up. He's like, Fudge is like, you're not aware that you have broken any school rules. Harry, school rules? No. And then, or ministry decrees? Not that I'm aware of. Harry's so cool here.
Yeah, like, although his heart is hammering very fast.
It does say that his brain is oddly cool and clear.
That's good. Well, I mean, he knows that Dumbledore is there to back him up. Like, that's gotta be comforting.
That's true. But I mean, I feel like this would be pretty satisfying to... Yeah, it says it was almost worth telling the lies to watch Fudge's blood pressure rising.
Yeah, that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so then Harry's... Harry, not the most convincing liar here. It says that he... hoists an unconvincing look of innocent surprise on his face when Fudge accuses him of starting an illegal student group.
Yeah, it's pretty, just like this whole back and forth between Harry and Fudge is very rewarding because it's just funny to see Harry being like a pretty bad liar but at the same time like getting really into it.
Yes.
And then Fudge just getting madder and madder.
Right. Yeah, so it's also funny to watch Fudge and Dumbledore's interactions because Fudge is like trying to goad Dumbledore but Dumbledore's just so calm the whole time. Like, Fudge is like, there's nothing like a good witness, is there, Dumbledore? Dumbledore. He's nothing at all, Cornelius, he says gravely, inclining his head. And so this is when they bring Marietta into the room, and this is the big reveal.
I thought Cho was the sneak.
Alice, that's only in the movie. Oh, I know it can be really confusing.
Ugh, well, we've talked a little bit about this, but it drives me nuts that they cut the Cho and Marietta thing.
It does drive me nuts, too, because it really I mean, I know we've talked about this, we've probably talked this into the ground, but... It really minimizes Cho's character, because that's not who she is. Like, she has her weaknesses, certainly, but the fact that she is the one who gives away
the... What would her motivation be on telling?
Well, it's the Veritaserum, according to the movie, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
right.
It's also, like, nobody else caved to the Veritaserum, so...
That doesn't even make sense.
It's just, like, a weakness of personality, or, like, a weakness of spirit that movie Cho has, and it's not the actress's fault, it's the writing.
Right. Yeah, it's sad, but I like that it's Marietta. This was in the book. It's been built up over the whole book that she's always kind of nervous, she isn't happy to be there, and that her mother works for the Ministry of Magic.
It's also interesting, I really hadn't noticed this until now, like, reading it for this episode, that she's not at the DA meeting, we see Cho in the meeting, but almost every time we see Cho throughout the book, Cho is with her friend Marietta, And in this final DA scene, it's just Cho that we hear about. We don't hear about Marietta. It doesn't say anything about Marietta not being there, but it doesn't also, it also doesn't mention her being there at all, so.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. Umbridge is just being so disgusting here. She's like,
don't be scared, dear. Don't be frightened. It's all quite all right now. You have done the right thing. The minister is very pleased with you. He'll be telling your mother what a good girl you've been.
It's just awful.
Yeah, and it's like, okay.
It's so patronizing.
Always, yeah, she's always talking to these kids like that they are 5 years old. Like, she'll be telling your mother what a good girl you've been. Like,
yes.
What a reward for a teenager.
You like, sounded kind of like Glinda when you said that.
Yeah. I'm a good witch. I'm a good girl. You're a good girl, Marietta.
Oh, great. What a compliment.
Yeah.
But then Fudge, jolly good, jolly good.
Yeah.
He's just so into it.
Because we do find out that Marietta's mother is not just a ministry employee, but she's the ministry employee who's been helping Fudge and Umbridge police the Hogwarts fires. She works with the Flu Network.
Right.
Yeah. So then Marietta's just, like, super upset, and then finally we get to see a close set of purple, how do you say it, pustules?
Pustules.
Purple pustules that had spread across her nose and cheeks to form the word sneak.
Right, and she's very distraught. It's all she can focus on is
the, she was distraught!
It's the only thing she can focus on is these pustules. She's not able to, I mean, she's just so distracted. And she's really upset. So this is why she's having trouble, like, sharing further information at this point.
I love,
never mind the spots, dear. Just take your robes away from your mouth and tell the minister. Oh, very well, you silly girl. I'll tell him.
Right, and the funny part is, too, it's like, don't mind the spots, but just a second ago when they all saw her face for the first time, Fudge, like pretty much, he's a galloping gargoyle.
Yeah, he leaps backwards in shock and nearly lands himself in the fire.
Like, okay, has he never seen anyone who, like, doesn't look totally right? Like,
it has to be, like, worse than you can even imagine.
Yeah, I guess
like,
so.
And I mean, I also, another thing that annoys me that this is not in the movie is just, like, this is just a testament to what an amazing witch Hermione is. And yeah, they take this part awesome. Out of the movie completely, too, and I love it. Ugh, I love this, that Hermione does this. But
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so
that was a dirty trick.
That was a dirty trick of that Hermione Granger.
That's what Cho says later.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
I think it was brilliant. That's what Harry says. So yeah, so the story that Umbridge tells is that Marietta came to Umbridge's office shortly after dinner, telling her that she had something she needed to tell her, which was that if she went to the room of requirement on the 7th floor, that she would find out something to her advantage. And all that she admitted was that there would be some kind of meeting there, and that's when the hex came into operation.
Yeah. So, at that point then, Marietta was, quote-unquote, too distressed to tell Umbridge anymore.
Yes.
So.
Good.
Yeah, it worked how Hermione wanted it to.
Yes, it did, and, I'm
surprised she didn't do, like, a tongue-tying curse or something, though, too.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising.
But that's probably, might be a little too advanced.
Or maybe a little bit too illegal.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. So then Fudge is, like, He fixes her with what he clearly imagined was a kind and fatherly look. He's like, it was very brave of you, my dear, coming to tell Professor Umbridge you did exactly the right thing.
Yeah.
And still she won't speak, and Fudge is getting really impatient, and I love it because it says that Umbridge has not yet managed to find a counter jinx, and Harry feels a surge of pride in Hermione's jinxing ability.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome.
Yes, it really is. So then we get the reveal that Willie Wittershins was overhearing the conversation in the Hogshead that day, and he told Umbridge about it the next day, so that's why Educational Decree number 24 came out.
Right, yeah, and, McGonagall is pretty outraged by that, and I can see why, because she says, oh, so that's why he was never prosecuted for those regurgitating toilets.
Yes.
And then the portrait, the portrait's name is Fortescue, so I'm thinking it must be a relative of Florian Fortescue.
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
Yeah, so the Fortescue, former headmaster, says,
Blatant corruption. The ministry did not cut deals with petty criminals in my day. No, sir, they did not.
Thank you, Fortescue. That will do.
But the Fortescues are a very nice family.
They are. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say, Hermione, you've got a lot to learn. If you had met the Three Broomsticks, probably Willie Wittershins wouldn't have been there to overhear
you. Very true. The one thing I was wondering, though, thinking about back to the Hogshead, do you think that... I know that Dumbledore was informed about their meeting by his brother, but do you think that Aberforth may have told Dumbledore the name that they had come up with of Dumbledore's army? Or did, oh, they did that later, didn't they?
Yeah, they came up with the name of the...
Oh, okay. Because yeah, I've always been impressed at how fast Dumbledore was able to come up with the, this was at my request.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe he had known ahead of time what their name was.
Well, he might because Sirius knows, so it's possible that Sirius would have told.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Okay, well, so maybe he did know ahead of time. Maybe he didn't just see it on the on the parchment.
I kind of feel like he did not just come up with this on the spot. But I mean, I wouldn't put it past Dumbledore, but I feel like he did know.
Well, when we get to the point where he sees the paper, we'll analyze it.
Yeah. So yeah, then this is when Umbridge goes on about how he was forming the legal society at that meeting, and this is when Dumbledore says, I think you'll find you're wrong there, Dolores.
I know, I love that. It's just he has a very good delivery on these lines.
Oh ho, yes, let's hear the latest cock and bull story designed to pull Potter out of trouble. Go on then, Dumbledore, go on. Willie Wittershins was lying, was he? Or was it Potter's identical twin in the Hogshead that day? Or is there the usual simple explanation involving a reversal of time, a dead man coming back to life, and a couple of invisible dementors?
And then Percy. Oh,
ho, ho, ho. Oh, very good, Minister. Very good.
Oh, and it says that Harry could have kicked him.
I would like to kick him, too.
Super. Like, that has to be, like, one of the most annoying things. Like,
very good, my Minister. Very good.
Such a sycophant.
Oh, I hate it. Oh, he's awful.
Yeah, so... Anyway, then Dumbledore...
He totally owns them.
Yeah, he says, like, okay, well... Pretty much that was not illegal on that day that they were meeting, because the decree came out 2 days later. Percy looked as though he had been struck in the face with something very heavy.
I wish it was my fist.
But then Umbridge quickly recovers and points out that the meetings in the 6 months since then have been illegal. So she doesn't care if the first one was illegal or not.
But then Dumbledore... Do we have any evidence that the meetings have continued for 6 months? And this is when Harry feels something brush against his side, a gentle something like a draft or bird wing. And he also thinks that he heard Kingsley whisper something.
Right, and this is when Kingsley... And I have to admit, this took me forever to realize what happened in this scene. Like, I don't know why. I think I was just reading too fast because this is such an exciting scene or something. But it was never clear to me that Kingsley... Like, does he put the Imperius curse on Marietta?
It says that he modified her memory at the end of the chapter. He modified her memory, okay. Yeah.
So I knew he had, like, tampered with Marietta in some way. So he modifies Marietta's memory so that when she's questioned later, she denies everything and she's super confused and, like, helps them out, basically.
Right.
I always used to just think, oh, that she had chickened out.
I always thought she had a change of heart. And yeah. I was like, oh, well, she's actually okay. She just was... Like, she's trying to defend Harry now, and that's okay, or something.
Yeah, I kind of thought that, too. I did not realize that she had her memory modified for some reason.
Even though, I mean, I know it says it at the end, but I guess I had never noticed this paragraph, too, where it's about, like, Harry feeling something brush against his legs. It's interesting that you feel a memory charm go past you.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe it wasn't actually the charm going past you. Maybe it was, like, Kingsley kind of, like, rustled and... pulled out his wand, and so he felt some breeze or something.
Yeah, so Kingsley modifies her memory, and he does a good job, because, like you said, she's gonna be denying everything that Umbridge questions her about.
Yeah, because Umbridge starts questioning her, and Harry says he feels a horrible plummeting in his stomach. But I do like the back and forth with Umbridge and Marietta here, because...
And the back and forth between Umbridge and McGonagall.
Yeah, exactly, because... She keeps on, Umbridge asks Marietta a question, and then Marietta is just shaking or nodding her head, depending on the question. So she asks the question, and Marietta shakes her head. And then She's like, I don't understand, like, what she's trying to say.
Yeah. Then she keeps shaking her head.
And then I don't think you understood the question, did you, dear?
Yeah. And then the best part is when McGonagall. Well, usually when a person shakes their head, they mean no. So unless Miss Edgecombe is using a form of sign language as yet unknown to humans...
It's such a funny line there, because yes. I just love how impatient McGonagall is, and it's... Yeah, I love when she gets like this.
And then this is when Umbridge takes Marietta by the shoulders and begins to shake her very hard, which Dumbledore shuts down right away, thankfully.
Yeah, well, and it says for the first time he looks angry.
Yeah, he was having fun before this.
Yeah.
He says, I cannot allow you to manhandle my students, Dolores.
Right, and I mean, it shows us where Dumbledore's line is, because he keeps his calm, but if people are manhandling the students, then he starts to get angry.
Yes, exactly. Umbridge just, like, she's, like, going crazy. She's like, no. Yeah, I mean, yes, you're right, Shacklebolt. I forgot myself. And he says, you want to calm yourself.
It's so creepy, like, how yes. she forgot herself. Yes. Like, and she just... This shows a dark side of Umbridge. I mean, we know that she approves of harming students already with the quill and stuff, yeah. but...
Right in plain sight, though, is a little bit...
Yeah, in front of other adults, and you just can tell that she doesn't even know what she's doing because she's so, like, angry in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I hadn't ever really noticed, but it says that Marietta's eyes are oddly blank-looking, and she's, like, completely unperturbed by the whole attack that Umbridge just did. So I don't really... I mean, it should be pretty obvious to the reader that Marietta's been...
I probably realized, like, figured it all out, like... It took me several years, I'll put it that way. Yeah, it wasn't like I figured it out this time when I was reading it, but I just, for the longest time, always thought she was just either, like had a change of heart or was too scared to say anything in front of Harry or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, with the sneak stuff, too.
Yeah, because even Harry picks up on this here. I mean, he's the one who describes Marietta's eyes as being kind of, like, blank-looking, and he says that he... had a sudden suspicion.
Yeah.
So, like, he knows. But the one thing I've always wondered, like, ever since I figured out what was going on here is it seems a little strange that Umbridge and Fudge would and Percy would have no idea what was going on with that. Like, they're already looking for any excuse to make sure that, you know, Marietta is telling them what they want. So, like, I'm surprised they didn't jump to, oh my gosh, somebody modified her memory.
Yeah, it's a little weird to me, too, because it kind of feels like... I mean, maybe they'd have no way to prove that, and they were, like, probably watching Dumbledore and McGonagall really closely, but, I mean, you could probably do a nonverbal... Well, I guess the fact that Kingsley doesn't do it nonverbally means it's probably really hard.
Well, but... I was gonna say about the nonverbal thing, too. I don't really see why he doesn't... He whispers it.
Yeah.
I think nonverbal stuff really gets solidified next book.
Yeah, I don't think it's a real thing until next book. I mean, obviously we see Dumbledore doing it, but... Yeah, so then Umbridge finally, she brings herself back to, there was a meeting tonight, and they seem to have been forewarned because they were, by the time they reached the seventh floor, they were all gone, but doesn't matter because she sent Pansy Parkinson back for the list, and they have all the names of all the students now.
Right, and...
And by thunder, look what they've named themselves.
By thunder. He's, like, so, like, scared about this, but he says, and see what they've named themselves? Dumbledore's army.
Well, the game is up. Would you like a written statement from me, Cornelius? Uh-huh. Or will a statement before these witnesses suffice? He totally had this planned out. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it before, but well, I'm pretty sure he
and I think
had it, like, scripted.
The part where above here he says, for a moment he seemed unable to speak as he's looking at the list. I think Dumbledore is just so touched by it.
Yeah.
He said that later, like, oh, I'm touched. Harry.
Yes, he does. But it's, silly old man.
I just think he's a little bit, like, choked up at this and, like, so, like, moved. Like, wow, these students, I'm so proud of them. So he, and then it's more realistic, too, though, because I don't know, he's just a good actor with it. Like, it almost seems like he's, like, taking a moment to gather his thoughts.
Yes.
And he'll have to, would you like a written confession from me? Or will a statement before these witnesses suffice?
Yeah, well, he obviously has it because Percy has it all down. I think so, sir.
Yeah, well, also his reveal, because Fudge is like, what are you talking about?
Yes. Goes,
not Potter's army, Dumbledore's army.
And then, but you?
That's right.
It's just so funny.
I know. And Harry does not want Dumbledore to do this, but...
I also love, you recruited these students for your army, and then Dumbledore, tonight was supposed to be the first meeting.
It's like, as if... Okay, it's so fake, though, because as if Dumbledore would, like, try to organize a meeting and then have it fail immediately. Like, that is so not how it would go if Dumbledore did that.
I love, tonight was supposed to be the first meeting.
And he's, like, merely, sad about that.
Merely to see whether they would be interested in joining me.
I see now that it was a mistake to invite Miss Edgecombe, of course.
So, okay, I've always been a little confused by this. Does it seem like Harry's meeting in the Hogshead, is Dumbledore saying that that was completely unrelated to Dumbledore's army?
I think so. I think he's saying, like, oh, they had this meeting.
And then the educational decree came out.
The educational decree came out, so they were like, okay, well, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And then now Dumbledore was trying to rile them up.
Yes. Well, tonight was supposed to be the first meeting.
It's just so sad, like, to think about, think about if that was real. Like,
yeah, if that was supposed to be the first meeting.
Like, Dumbledore tries to organize the meeting and then gets caught.
Dumbledore,
like,
wasn't even there.
Like, Fudge really believes that that would be, like, that, yeah. Dumbledore is that fumbling.
Yeah, that's really hard to... I mean, I guess he just is looking for any reason to get Dumbledore, but
right.
Yeah, I think it's, I've always thought that it was weird that they were, I always thought that the cover story was like, yeah, Harry made that meeting, or had that meeting in the Hogshead 6 months ago, and then they didn't have a meeting until tonight. Like, that's what, yeah, it always felt like to me, but I think you're right. Like, when I was reading it this time, I was like, okay, I think he's actually saying that the Harry meeting was completely unrelated, that then they decided, like, oh, well, we can't do that after the educational decree.
Right. So, and like you said, then, it's pretty funny to see, like, how giddy Percy, Fudge, and Umbridge all are about this, although it's very annoying, too.
Yes, well, but I love it because he's like, no! And Dumbledore tells him to be quiet, and Fudge goes, yes, shut up, Potter! Like, okay.
Right, like, Harry was gonna help Fudge in that situation, actually. Like, not help him in the sense of not being, like... Fudge is probably, his ultimate goal here is to get Dumbledore, so, like, it wouldn't help him in that sense, but it might clarify the situation to him more, and Harry might confess.
Yeah, well, he came here expecting to expel Potter, and instead, he gets to arrest Dumbledore. It's like losing a knut and finding a galleon, isn't it?
But it's also funny because...
I've never said knut before, that was weird.
I think it's funny because Dumbledore, in his whole plan here, he definitely... does a good job, because I think the key to this is the fact that he's playing off of Fudge's worst fears.
Yes.
And you see Fudge, so then you have been plotting against me.
That's right.
So, like, as much as Fudge, like, in his calmest, most rational state, would know that Dumbledore is not plotting against him.
Right.
But Dumbledore knows that that is not the state he's going to be in.
Right.
And he's going to be able to play off of that to the point where, and that is his biggest insecurity, is with,
exactly,
Dumbledore.
And that's exactly what he wants. Like, he knows that Fudge wants that to happen.
Yes, exactly. It's like his biggest fear and then also his, like, greatest desire at the
exactly.
same time.
Exactly, yeah. It's perfect. So yeah, this is when Fudge goes, you will now be escorted back to the Ministry, where you'll be formally charged and then sent to Azkaban to await trial. And then Dumbledore goes, ah, yes. Yes, I thought we might hit this little snag.
Yeah, Fudge, snag? I see no snag, Dumbledore.
And then I just love, again, I know we've done a lot of quoting this episode, but I just love when Dumbledore goes, well, it's just that you seem to be laboring under the delusion that I'm going to, what is the phrase? Come quietly. I'm afraid I am not going to come quietly at all, Cornelius. I have absolutely no intention of being sent to Azkaban. I could break out, of course, but what a waste of time, and frankly, I can think of a whole host of things I would rather be doing.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so, like, I love his delivery on everything in this scene is just amazing. Dumbledore, it's like it's scripted out ahead of time or something.
Mm-hmm, yes, and then when I was reading this, I was reminded of when we did our Seamus face challenge, Alice, because this, the next description of what Fudge's expression looks like, I'm still very curious, I'm very curious to find out what our listeners might think that this expression looks like, because it's described as a very silly expression, as though he had just been stunned by a sudden blow and could not quite believe it had happened.
Yeah, it's
Let's see it, Alice, and take a picture and we'll post it in the Patreon group.
Well, I feel like I'm going to be able to do this better in private.
Okay, well, I'll do mine to you then.
Martha kind of has her eyes closed and her tongue sticking out.
No.
It is a very silly expression.
It's supposed to look like...
It does not look like what you think it does.
Okay, well, I'm trying to, like, blink, like, what just happened?
Well, I do want you to post a photo of that. It's pretty entertaining. And I think that fudge face is going
hashtag
to be...
Hashtag fudge face. So the description is a very silly expression as though he had just been stunned by a sudden blow and could not quite believe it had happened. So take your fudge face. Alice is looking up right now whether there's a hashtag fudge face.
Well, yeah, because last time when we did Seamus face, there happened to be like some other sort of challenge or something.
Well, no, it was not. It was literally just one guy that had posted a picture. It was like his name was Seamus and he was doing his own hashtag. There were like three photos. Let's do real weird fudge face, because I'm sure that that's not a real hashtag.
It kind of sounds like it has the potential to be inappropriate.
Okay, real weird fudge face.
Or Cornelius fudge face.
No, real weird fudge face. Then we know it's real weird, okay?
Okay, fine.
So, post your fudge face with the hashtag real weird fudge face.
And don't think of anything gross with this, please.
Okay. I wasn't thinking of anything real.
No, I'm looking at some of these tweets and I'm a little bit concerned about this.
Okay, well, don't look up fudge face. Just look up hashtag real weird fudge face. Unless you're into that. So, yeah, patrons last time came out in all colors to do this.
Yeah, it was really fun.
We had a few people on Twitter also, so hit us with your fudge face, people. And we'll announce the winner next week.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the photos.
Me too. Yeah, so this is a really funny scene, too, because Dawlish, we finally get his name, and he starts to, like, move towards Dumbledore with his wand moving, his hand moving casually towards his pocket. And Dumbledore, don't be silly, Dawlish. I'm sure you are an excellent auror. I seem to remember that you achieved outstanding in all your newts, but if you attempt to, bring me in by force, I will have to hurt you.
And I also like them later. Fudge. So, you intend to take on Dawlish, Shacklebolt, Dolores, and myself, single-handed. Do you, Merlin? Or do you, Dumbledore?
Yeah.
Merlin's beard, no. Says Dumbledore.
Not unless you are foolish enough to force me to. Yeah, burnt, Fudge. Like, he's like, oh, I would not want to do that because I would definitely win and you'd all be sorry.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Harry level burn on Dudley
also,
here.
Like, it's silly because part of it is he's also not going to be taking on Shacklebolt.
Yeah, well, no, he does because he hexes Kingsley to keep up the jig or whatever.
Then McGonagall chimes in. He will not be single-handed.
Oh, yes, he will, Minerva. Hogwarts needs you. I love Dumbledore speaking in third person. Oh, yes, he will, Minerva.
And I just love how McGonagall is, like, so, like, she's kind of...
She like, goes really crazy here. Yeah. He will not be single-handed! Oh, yes, he will. Yeah, so this is when Dumbledore just immediately takes them all down. Like, it says that he hexed them. This is clearly non-verbal spells here.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive magic that he does, because he hexes them all, except for Harry and McGonagall.
McGonagall forces Harry and Marietta out of harm's way. Thanks, McGonagall. Clearly Dumbledore wasn't really looking out.
Yeah, well, maybe he was planning to hex Harry.
Maybe,
but... just gonna have McGonagall pass on the news.
Well, but
Yeah, he wants to communicate with Harry, but
He hasn't been super successful with that this book.
Exactly, so, but I mean, either way.
Yeah, so Kingsley, Dawlish, Fudge, and Umbridge are all on the floor, and Dumbledore explains that he had to hex Kingsley, otherwise it would have been very suspicious. And he does clearly state it was very smart of Kingsley to modify Marietta's memory so quickly.
Yeah, and he was able to do that. Apparently everyone else was looking the other way when he did that, so.
Right, so... McGonagall's like, where are you going, Grimmauld Place? And Dumbledore's like, oh, I'm not hiding. Fudge will soon wish he had never dislodged me from Hogwarts, I promise you.
And we never really get to
see... No, I don't really
know
what his plans were.
Yeah, like, that doesn't really play out.
No.
I mean, he just basically ends up at the Ministry. So,
For the final duel,
yeah. That's, like, the last... That's really... We don't know what else he's doing.
What he was planning.
looking for Horcruxes or something. Oh, probably, I don't know. Yeah. Or, like, trying to track down memories or something.
Yeah, doing whatever he does.
I don't know that it's Fudge who regrets that.
No. Yeah. So then this is when Harry starts to talk to Professor Dumbledore. And he starts to talk to Dumbledore, and Dumbledore's like, "Listen to me, Harry. You must study occlumency as hard as you can. Do you understand me?"
This is when Harry feels pain shoot through his forehead, and he feels again that terrible snake-like longing to strike Dumbledore, to bite him, to hurt him.
Ugh, it's creepy.
It's very creepy.
And it's like, that's gotta be so, like, disconcerting for Harry, too.
Yeah.
To just feel that with no control over it.
Yeah, because it's a very emotional moment for him, because he's thinking he doesn't know what to say to Dumbledore, because he's thinking he has so many things he wants to. He wants to say he was so sorry he created the DA, and that he, all of that, and he doesn't even know what to say, and then he feels this horrible sensation.
Right.
So it's just a very emotional moment for Harry, but Dumbledore, I have to say, like, telling Harry to practice occlumency in this moment, I feel like it's kind of a frustrating line, like, just because, again, the occlumency, like, it's just, there's never a reason given. I don't know what Dumbledore could have done better in this particular situation, but for Harry, it's like, yeah, I know I'm supposed to be practicing occlumency.
Especially when he goes, "You will understand why soon enough." And like, okay, no, maybe not, actually. Yeah, and maybe you should explain it now. Because he's like, "Close your mind to bad dreams." He doesn't say why, but he says you'll understand why soon enough.
It's pretty epic, though, because he's, all of this going, I love how this scene plays out. It's like
crazy.
So cool, with all the ministry officials knocked out on the floor, and Dumbledore just giving, like, a few pieces of information and then leaving.
How does he leave? I know he goes with Fox, but I don't really know. Does the ceiling, like, open up or something? Like, I don't really understand that.
I think
it's kind of like
there was
flu
a
powder.
Flash of fire and the pair of them had gone. I think this is sort of maybe an it's not exactly apparition. It's kind of like
Flu powder.
It's fire. Yeah, it's kind of like flu powder, but I see it as like sort of something where it's a little bit of an exception. Like, maybe the founders wouldn't have thought about the idea that a phoenix could apparate in
yeah.
this way.
Or maybe they wanted to have that because one of them, I think Gryffindor did have a phoenix.
Yeah, so anyway, very convenient that Fox was able to rescue Dumbledore.
Yes. And then so Fudd, this is right when they all wake up and they're like, "Where is he?" And Dawlish and Kingsley and Umbridge all run up the stairs, wrench open the door and leave. And Fudge gets up to his feet and he's like, "Well, Minerva, I'm afraid this is the end of your friend Dumbledore."
"You think so, do you?" she says scornfully.
Yeah, and so then he tells McGonagall to take Harry and Marietta off to bed. And then we hear Phineas Nigellus. It's not Kingsley Alice, but we hear Phineas Nigellus' reedy voice.
"You know, Minister, I disagree with Dumbledore on many counts, but you cannot deny he's got style."
It's much better. I mean, okay. It's annoying the way it's delivered in the movie.
"You may not like it, Minister, but you can't deny Dumbledore's got style."
Well, it's a little silly coming from someone who's a member of the Order.
Yes, it is.
Like, I don't think that Kingsley would say that.
"You may not like it, Minister." Like, it's so, like, cheesy. I like when Phineas says it because it's so random.
Yeah, and it's so true because you can't deny that Dumbledore's got style.
No, you certainly can't.
So, it's an amazing chapter. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I loved it too. And I mean, I think it's definitely our best so far in terms of the chapter rankings.
I agree. I mean, the excitement of the chapter, it's just so, it's unmatched so far.
It's really, really good. It may be even the best of the series. No, I don't know. It's not, because there's going to be better ones coming up in this chapter, but maybe the best we've read so far.
Yeah.
No, there's some good ones. I don't know.
It's just amazing. Like, I just love the way that it all plays out, and the beginning of the chapter was a little bit slower with that divination lesson and stuff, yeah, but most of it...
I bet you wish you had given up divination now, don't you, Hermione?
Yeah, so there was a little bit, but it wasn't that long, that stuff wasn't. Got into the action pretty fast, and it's also cool because it kind of feels like it comes out of nowhere.
Yes.
In the sense that they're just having an average meeting of the DA, and Harry's, like, making plans for future meetings and everything,
yes.
And then suddenly, and just the way it all plays out, it's just so well done. Okay, so I'm good with putting it in first if you are.
I am definitely. I think it's definitely number one. And then for real weirdo, I mean, it's hard to not give it to Dumbledore. We gave it to him last chapter, but...
Yeah, but I mean, he's on a roll here.
Like, he's really on a roll.
These are two amazing...
That was my one hesitation about giving it to him last chapter. It's like he's definitely gonna get it next chapter.
I know, but we can't base it on that. We could
give it to Firenze, but...
I mean, McGonagall was really fun in this chapter, too. Yeah. But I just think nobody compares to Dumbledore here.
Yeah, okay, let's give it to Dumbledore again.
Okay, I mean, I don't think he'll get it next chapter. Well,
he might get it again this book,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah, but there's no limit on these things.
That's, well, according to you.
According to you, there is.
Yeah, but. Okay. Well, Dumbledore, congrats. I think that's the first time we've had a double whammy of a real weirdo 2 chapters in a row.
I don't know. We might have before. We'll have to check the records.
I'm pretty sure we haven't had it 2 chapters in a row. I know definitely twice in a book, but...
Yeah.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the episode. You can find our lists of chapter rankings and real weirdos on our website, realweirdsisters.com. On there as well, you can find the link to our Patreon, patreon.com/realweirdsisters, or you can access it through our Real Weird Sisters website. On Patreon, we have several different levels that you can pledge monthly donations at. It really does help us out to keep growing the show and keep it going strong. It does take a lot to record this show every week. We love doing it, but it is an investment, and that's why we're so grateful to our patrons for helping to keep us going and keep us improving and all that as well. So definitely consider joining Patreon if you have a chance or have the ability to. Of course, there's other ways to support us that are non-monetarily. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/realweirdsisters, hit like on that Facebook page, and you can also comment and interact with other Real Weird listeners. Follow us on Twitter at Real Weird Sister. That's a great way to act as a Google assistant to us so that we don't have to Google things. And of course, another great way to support the show is to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use. We do have a 5-star review that we'd like to read this week, and the title of this review is Just Like Family. This is by Slytherin Crispy 23. This listener, and her name is Christina, actually, she writes that at the end. She says, I started listening to podcasts recently, and this is one of my absolute favorites. I look forward to listening to it at the beginning of my workday and at the end of my workday on my drive home. I finally feel like I'm part of a family that understands me. Thank you for all the love and opinions that fill every episode. Keep it weird, Christina.
Aw, that's so nice.
It is very nice.
Welcome to the family, Christina. That sounds a little creepy, family.
But yes, we are a family, especially the patrons are a family, so maybe Christina should consider pledging on Patreon.
Yeah, could be a choice, but she has supported us through this.
Yes, that's a great way to support us too. So thank you, Christina, for writing such a nice review. Thank you to everybody who has written us reviews and everybody who's thinking about writing reviews. We would thank you even more if you would actually write it, but thank you in advance. We will be back next week to talk about chapter 28, which is Snape's worst memory. Very exciting. And also, Alice, we do have a special topics episode that will be coming out later this week, so make sure that you're subscribed. It's going to be a really good one. Until next time, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Please stand up.